disaster. Don't you give up, don't you let away. Talking about a forever after. Don't you give up, don't you dare give in.
Don't you give up, don't you dare give in. And don't quit your job. Jack Tuckner and Deborah O'Rell here. We are excited. Are we not excited, Deborah?
Very excited.
We have our guest today is the renowned David Yamada. David is, he is the workplace bullying expert. If anyone out there, and we know that many of our listeners have, because statistically it has happened to a whole bunch of us, have been bullied at work or know someone or love someone who has been or is being bullied at work. And we have David Yamada here, the host of the Minding the Workplace blog. He is a tenured professor of law and the founding director of the New Workplace Institute at Suffolk University Law School in Boston. David is an internationally recognized authority on the legal aspects of workplace bullying, and he is the author of model anti-bullying legislation, dubbed the Healthy Workplace Bill, and wouldn't we all want a healthier workplace, that has become the template for law reform efforts across the country. In addition to teaching at Suffolk Law School, David holds numerous leadership positions in nonprofit and policy advocacy organizations, and we're thrilled to have him here. David, are you with us?
I am here, Jack and Deborah, and it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Outstanding. Thank you very much being with us today. And for folks who are listening and want to ask Professor Yamada a question today, our call-in number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Well, thank you very much, Professor Yamada. Welcome.
Thank you.
So an important issue, clearly, workplace bullying. And, you know, we certainly see it in our work as plaintiffs' employment lawyers all the time. Not a week goes by where someone doesn't call and tells us about a scenario that sounds like clearly bullying. It's just that it perhaps doesn't rise to the level of something that we still consider actionable at this point in time. So first, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this particular specialty field?
Well, Jack, I'm a labor and employment professor, and about 15 years ago, I was just surfing the internet like so many of us do and found some articles talking about this phenomenon called workplace bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Gary and Ruth Namey, a couple of PhDs in psychology, were incorporating this term into American employment relations. It first started to get currency over across the pond there in England, where the term bullying is much more a part of their everyday vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And Gary and Ruth were starting what they called the Campaign Against Workplace Bullying. I read about their work. I read about what workplace bullying is, you know, that kind of targeted, intentional mistreatment of a worker that's designed to pretty much sort of, you know, grind them into the in the ground there. And light bulbs went off for me. I realized that this was an area that really was likely to escape the protections of current employment laws, and I contacted them, said I'd love to look into what the legal protections are for people who've been targeted in this way and to address this from the legal and public policy angle. And that's what started to get the ball rolling for me as far as the research and advocacy I've been doing on this issue.
Can you define bullying? And let me just say this, from when most of us hear the word, I think the first thing that pops into our head is this, you know, this sort of the schoolyard bully of yore that, you know, that picks on someone that they perceive to be less powerful than themselves in a kind of very unfair and unjust way,
mm-hmm.
right? Or we think of when the word term is used, like a politician like Chris Christie, who just tends to like to push people around. But when it comes to the workplace, how would you define bullying in the workplace, Professor?
Well, I think you have to look at the main elements of what we would call workplace bullying. It tends to be targeted, intentional, repeated, and health-harming. And to get into a little bit more detail on that, Jack, you're absolutely right. The way we think of the word bully, sort of stereotypically, is, you know, the kid beating up on another one at school, the yelling and screaming boss type of person, you know, the kind of thuggish, presence in a more overt way. But another form of bullying that we see in the workplace is the behind-the-back stuff, the covert behaviors, the undermining of someone's confidence and work performance, the sabotage of their reputation, oftentimes done in a fairly orchestrated way designed to try and drive them out of the workforce. So we have forms of bullying that would be considered more overt and in-your-face, as well as the more covert, behind the back stuff that often catches people by surprise.
Can you give a couple of examples of what that is so that, you know, most of us work and know what is that something that is, you know, really insidious and is hard to sort of put your finger on? Or what are some examples?
Well, it's the kind of thing that starts to add up. So let's take something that sounds sort of innocuous, accidentally being left off of an email chain.
Okay,
so it happens once, and you say, well, you know, it was an accident. You know, I wasn't in that loop, and somebody just made a mistake by not including me in on it. You raise your concern about that, say, please include me on the next round of exchanges on that, and it continues. Then slowly you find out that people are talking about you, and you hear that people are taking credit for things that you have been doing. Little things like that start to add up, and before you know it, you start to hear some actual lies about your performance, some very wrongful things being said about what you're doing in the workplace. And before you know it, you realize that somebody has been targeting you in a way that's designed to undermine your own confidence and to undermine your reputation in that particular workplace. It can get worse. I mean, in worst-case bullying situations, you see situations where people have been targeted electronically, where the same type of electronic bullying that kids might experience gets even worse in the workplace. I've seen situations where people have been subjected to electronic surveillance, activities that just go beyond the pale. So there's a real spectrum there, but the key things to look for are that they're repeated, that they're intentional, that they're targeted, and then the light bulb starts to go on and you realize that it's not just a one-time thing and that you're not making it up in your own head there.
And does it matter why that's happening to you?
You know, that's a good question. The why of bullying is oftentimes hard to discern. And it sort of goes back to the motivations behind this kind of behavior. We'll see, for example, bullying behaviors from the mid-level manager who's being pressured by his or her boss to do more with fewer resources. So oftentimes that manifests itself in just sort of, you know, trying to drive the herd, more forcefully, and that can lead to behaviors that get a little over the top. That's one form of bullying that I think a lot of us can understand, especially in a meltdown economy where people are feeling those pressures to try and produce, and they don't know how to get the best out of people, so instead they just try and crack the whip a little, and sometimes it gets very personal.
Right.
But then there's those situations where you're probably dealing with somebody who has psychopathic tendencies. Research shows that roughly 1-2% of the population can be labeled a psychopath. And research further shows that psychopathic traits tend to appear more frequently the higher up you go on the management food chain.
Right.
We also know that bullying in the United States, at least, tends to be more top-down. In other words, it's supervisor to subordinate.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody comes to your law office and says, you know, I'm being targeted by a psychopath, they may be exaggerating, or they may not be exaggerating. Maybe there's something about that person's behavior that's just given them the chills.
Right.
And they are being targeted by somebody who is really out to get them for reasons that have nothing to do with rationality.
Well, we could include within the umbrella terminology of psychopath also sociopaths.
Absolutely.
And I think I've read that a lot higher percentage of CEOs are actually sociopathic than the general population. So, right, as you get higher up into a corporate food chain, perhaps you will see more of the sort of, you know, sort of demand or, you know, psychologically aberrant behavior.
Exactly. The smile while they're stabbing you behind the back type of individual, the charmer, the kiss up, kick down type of individual.
Right.
All those traits tend to generate the higher up we go. And that's why I suggested sometimes, you know, that potential client will come to your law office and say, you know, boy, there's something really wrong with this person who's going after me.
Right. But we do know that corporate America often encourages the type of, you know, I think you used the term, you know, the whip master or whatever you said about somebody cracking the whip in a meltdown economy. If a company that's profit driven is saying, hey, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen, and your boss is there, we want him or her to crack that whip. Is there a sort of a built-in dissonance between what sort of a corporation wants and expects and can have and what employees in a healthy workplace, so-called in a healthy workplace that we all think is model, should be? Is there a tension there?
Oh, absolutely. The research that's been done on bullying the workplace definitely indicates that this is a question of workplace culture, not just the aberrant boss, uh-huh, you know, gone haywire. Oftentimes, these behaviors are validated either expressly or by omission by the employer, sending that message that this behavior is, at the very least, we're going to look the other way, and at times is encouraged.
Right. Well, I guess, you know what, I just, in no particular order, and part of this I'm just going to, by way of having you tell us all about this, which, again, you're preaching to the choir with us, but what I always find a little bit, and I get my own sort of sense of, you know, cognitive dissonance with all of this, is because I saw in one of the writings, and I think, it was in one of your articles, or maybe it was quoting Gary Namy, but that one of the behaviors, for instance, is considered bullying, perhaps, would be a boss who says to his secretary every day, what are you, stupid? Right? What are you,
yep,
stupid? So that kind of certainly harmful, psychologically harmful, mean, cruel, everything about it is designed to almost disempower her. But in an employment situation, the company would say, well, wait a minute, if she can't stand the heat, she can get out of the kitchen. If she doesn't have a reason, right, under the, at least the way that we understand the current framework of the employment laws, if she can't say he's treating me that bad, this hostile work environment, because I am fill in the blank, Asian American, female, over 40, gay, what have you, or I said no to his sexual advances, if he does practices his craft that way, and that's how he feels he wants to motivate his staff by being mean and cruel, and we, the company, feel that that's perfectly appropriate because he's a producer or a rainmaker, what have you. I am just, how do you argue that for us, why and how and in what world that will ever be illegal, where you would be able to argue, you know what, it's just not right. Doesn't matter if she is 35 and Caucasian and so is he, right? He just should not be permitted, mm-hmm, to talk to her that way. But are there any laws anywhere on the books that would give her some leg to stand on?
Well, you hit the legal nail on the head there. Unless the bullying behaviors can be tied to some type of discriminatory animus or hostility, as you noted, race, sex, disability, the classic group of protected classes under employment discrimination law, or it's a situation that may trigger some type of whistleblowing provision. Mm-hmm. Let's say somebody is being bullied in retaliation for reporting some type of unethical or illegal behavior. Mm-hmm. If it's not one of those two scenarios, it's very possible that the bullying will escape the reach of current employment laws. And that indeed is what I discovered when I did my original research on this. It was my starting hypothesis that tort claims for intentional infliction of emotional distress would be the legal angle that severely bullied employees could use to try and stop this behavior, at least to try and challenge it. Mm-hmm. And to my surprise and disappointment, and in looking back, it was naive that I was either surprised or disappointed, I saw that courts repeatedly rejected those claims. and oftentimes dismissed them before they even went to trial. In other cases, they said that workers' compensation laws prevented somebody from even bringing a lawsuit like that against their employer. So your comments are right on spot there. The typical garden variety target of bullying oftentimes goes to someone like you or Deborah, explains their situation, is just suffering mightily under that mistreatment, and oftentimes they have to be told, you know what, it sounds like what's happening is terrible, but it is legal to right. treat somebody like that, at least in the American workplace.
Right. So you have, I believe, what, there are some, there are, the bills have been, the Healthy Workplace Bill, based on your research and your work and all of this, in the, you know, would inure to the interest of all of us workers and a happier, more productive culture and environment, and all of it is great. And I believe that you have the Healthy Workplace Bill was introduced in 21 legislatures around the country?
Yeah, I drafted this, and you mentioned it in your introduction, sort of a template piece of legislation that we labeled the Healthy Workplace Bill. You know, you have to have kind of a little smiley face on the end of legislation these days to make it sound more palatable. But in essence, it's designed to create a civil legal claim so that somebody who is being severely bullied at work and can show some type of health impairment as a result can recover damages from their employer. It also builds in incentives for employers, much like the Civil Rights Act includes incentives for employers, to act preventively and responsively towards workplace bullying. In that sense, it kind of parallels to some degree the way in which legal protections against sexual harassment have evolved over the last 30 years or so, and tries to create this basic right against an abusive work environment while incentivizing behavior on behalf of employers to try and prevent this from occurring. You know, it's not going to make the workplace a perfect world, obviously, right. When it's enacted, but it at least tries to elevate bullying to the point where employers have to take this seriously as a workplace and liability issue.
So there's an anti-retaliation aspect.
Absolutely.
To it?
Somebody who reports or files a complaint about bullying and is retaliated against because of it would have a separate retaliation claim. And they would be able to seek the kinds of damages that you would see in personal injury lawsuits, for, you know, loss of income, for health impairments, for, you know, various types of pain and suffering. So, it's designed to fill that gap that currently exists in the law. And, as you noted, the bill has been introduced, various forms of it have been introduced in a couple of dozen states over the years. We're getting closer to the point where this thing is going to become law. And even the management side employment lawyers are starting to advise their clients to develop anti-bullying policies and practices and in anticipation of this becoming a reality.
No kidding. Well, where might it be enacted first? Where do you think?
We've seen progress in New York State. A couple of years ago, the New York State Senate did pass the Healthy Workplace Bill with strong bipartisan support. In fact, it was a Republican who was lead sponsor.
Okay.
It did make over to the Assembly, however. We saw similar progress in Illinois a few years ago. In Massachusetts, we've made it through most of the committee hearing process, and are sort of on the precipice of getting a House vote, in the current session. So, it's bubbling up. You know, you folks have probably followed state level legislation long enough to know that it takes a long time to get a new idea.
Oh, it takes...
through the legislature.
Yeah.
So we're just pounding away, and we're going to keep doing so in every session until they start biting on this. And I tell you, once the first state goes for this, others are going to follow.
Right.
But, you know, no one wants to be the first.
Right. Momentum.
Right.
Momentum. Sure. But in what, so Professor Yamato, in what sort of alternate universe, here you have a Republican in New York, and I was unaware of that, that proposed the legislation, given, and I just wanted to just point this out, and then we'll talk about we'll stay focused on the positive. In a world where just today in the New York Times, I don't know if you saw, there was an opinion piece about, you know, the Republican war on workers' rights.
Mm-hmm.
And just, did you see that? So just the Republicans won control of the executive and legislative branches in 11 states, and then there are now more than 20 such states since 2010. And inspired by business groups like ALEC, right, and the National Association of Manufacturers, they've been proceeding to rewrite the rules of work in the opposite direction, I think, of what you've been talking about in a healthy workplace bill. The legislation involved unemployment insurance, the minimum wage, child labor, collective bargaining, sick days, even meal breaks, where the Republicans, of course, are trying to reverse and bring us back to pre-New Deal, you know, including New Hampshire Republicans completely eradicated the minimum wage laws in New Hampshire in 2011. And, of course, just the federal laws are still in place. So when you have these sort of cookie cutter, you know, consistently favoring employers over workers from the sort of Chamber of Commerce interests, and it's only getting worse since Citizens United and Corporations of Persons and all of the challenges that we sort of progressives, you know, are constantly gearing up to battle, and hopefully we'll perhaps make some progress on that one day. And you even have just also notes in the article that in this op-ed piece that it quotes the overall thrust of various state legislation is to create workers who are docile and employers who are empowered. That may be why Republican legislators in Idaho, Wisconsin, Michigan, Maine, Ohio, Minnesota, Utah, and Missouri have been so eager to ease restrictions on when and how much children can work. High schoolers should learn workplace virtue, says the conservative commentator Ben Stein, like not talking back. Early exposure to employment will teach 12-year-olds, as the spokesman of an Idaho school district put it, that, quote, you have to do what your supervisor is telling you. And it just goes on to talk about now, in fact, you can lose your unemployment benefits if you're fired, because they've rewritten a host of new laws that talk about anything that you do that might, including perhaps going to the bathroom without permission, might be enough for your employer to say that you deliberately violated or disregarded a reasonable standard of behavior, and now you're disenfranchised from even an entitlement to keep your lights on after you're terminated. So in this terrible environment that workers, you know, anti-union, anti-labor, anti-work, you have something that just seems so, and I'm obviously playing devil's advocate, you know, so almost, you know, this sort of pie in the sky, it's awesome, what we'd all want, a beautiful, you know, almost a sort of a kumbaya. I could see the Republicans saying, yeah, right, we'll sign on to
healthy.
Can you imagine a healthy workplace? Your boss can't raise his voice to you? I mean, remember, you know, you'd say these are lawyers in New York City. They're not going to scream at you. Get used to it.
Jack, you've done a pretty good job of depressing me. I think I'll just, you know, I'll let you guys, you and Deborah, talk
no,
for the rest
of
the program.
Back. I want you to
push back. To push back.
Yes.
Although I agree with all of the above, it's a really nasty time to be advocating for worker rights and worker dignity. And some of those players that you mentioned are opposing the healthy workplace bill whenever it gets ahead of steam in any given state.
Right.
The Chamber of Commerce has put the healthy workplace bill on its so-called job killer lists.
Right.
You know, whenever they've seen support pop up at the state level,
sure.
We've seen opposition from management side trade associations here in Massachusetts. We've also seen the Society for Human Resource Management come out against this legislation. However, you know what? If they're going to be advocating for all this nasty anti-workers' rights type of stuff,
mm-hmm.
we've got to be coming back with stuff that we favor, right?
That's right.
You know, and progressives have been on the defensive since, you know, 1980, right? And when it comes to workers' rights, you know, this is actually something that we try to sell across the board. Now, obviously, we've got a lot more support from Democrats than Republicans on this. We get a lot more support from labor unions than from certainly anything management side on this. Nevertheless, this is almost a libertarian type of bill. It's about saying you should have a right to be left alone at work so that you can do your job. And that should be, you know, a core right that everyone should have, and that frankly, employers should jump on, because, you know, when this stuff happens at work, it just wreaks havoc on employee morale. Mm-hmm. You know, the attrition goes up, the stress levels go up. I have to remind people, this is the ultimate lose-lose type of mistreatment in the workplace. Right. No one wins except for maybe that so-called bully or aggressor who might be getting off on it.
Right.
But, you know, we are in an era where too many employers don't get that. You know, exactly what you were saying about the mentality of so many employers that think workers should be, you know, sort of docile beasts of burden, whether they're in factories or in offices. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to advocate for this healthy workplace bill is that there is a line that is crossed that just, you know, the law has to step in and say, you can't torture someone like this. You can't be abusing them in this way. And so just stop. You know, that's the line in the sand here. And yes, it's an uphill battle. But, you know, the fact that even in this era, you've got, you know, roughly half the states have at least been willing to consider some version of this thing, including states like New Hampshire, including states like Oklahoma, even a few years back. You know, it's got some potential to transcend the red-blue distinction, even with this very polarized political era that we're living in today.
But yet, not one of the legislatures has yet to pass it.
Not yet. As I said, you know what? I've worked on legislative campaigns where it takes, you know, three or four sessions to get, you know, a few commas changed in an employment statute. I'm exaggerating, but, you know, we're talking about a term that 15 years ago was not an everyday part of our employee relations vocabulary.
That's for sure. So,
the fact that we haven't been successful so far, you know, I can get down about the current state of the economy and workers' rights and stuff like that, but I'm not really, you know, I'm not down about the fact that no one has passed this yet, because I think its day is coming, and perhaps sooner than later.
Well, you know, what I also think, too, it has to do with simply awareness. Just a few years ago, there were no protections for bullies in schools.
Yeah.
And now that is much more, it's not a completely unknown.
Well, in New York, and maybe Professor Amato knows Daniel O'Donnell. We had the legislator on a few weeks ago who was had proposed and I guess had passed the New York anti-bullying in the school bill.
Right. So as more legislation like that passes, where how hard is that to pass? You know, because you're just talking about kids in a school and trying to protect kids. But what it does is invite that conversation. So, and even just today, I did an intake with somebody today, and it was so obvious to me hearing her story. She was working for a bully, but I was digging to try and see if I could wrap it around some possible protection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. But again, and I was saying, this guy is a bully. You know, we just have to figure out if there could be some, you know, protection. Otherwise, you're SOL.
Yeah.
And she didn't even realize, like, that was even, you know, they're not allowed to bully me. And it's like, yes, they are actually right now. But the point is, you don't have to, you shouldn't have to tolerate that.
And is the language, is it similar, David, the sort of that other than, you know, if one says, in taking away the protected status or category, if you worked in an environment where the severe and pervasive hostility that, you know, degrades the terms or conditions of your employment, and the only distinction is you could be anybody as long as you can show that?
Yeah, the language of this healthy workplace bill is kind of a cross between the way in which the Supreme Court has defined a hostile work environment under sexual harassment and the tort of intentional infliction of emotional distress. It sort of is somewhere in between those two. And it weighs a bunch of factors. You know, the hardest thing, obviously, is one of definition. To define bullying in the abstract simply by listing everything out doesn't necessarily right. tell the story. I mean, as both of you know,
right.
through your practices, sometimes it's really understanding the context of these behaviors when all of a sudden you realize, oh boy, that's what's going on there.
Exactly.
So the legislation says you got to consider this stuff in its totality, but it does set a fairly high threshold. It shows that there has to be some intention to create this abusive work environment, because frankly, I think this is a door that we have to open somewhat carefully, because if the bill becomes something that's used for every worker who doesn't like their boss on one day to march into your office and say, I want to sue,
right.
then all of a sudden we're going to have a lot of problems on our hand, and,
right.
and the bad cases will swallow up the
exactly.
good ones.
Exactly.
But that said, you know, Deborah, your comments about the school bullying and whether or not there's sort of a wider awareness of workplace bullying as a result, I think we are getting a little bit of sort of a positive, I don't know if halo effect is the right word for a situation like this, but certainly people are starting to realize that these behaviors, you know, that the sticks and stones and, mm-hmm. you know, do hurt people, but the words do as well. And I think it's becoming an easier sell to say, hey, you know what, this behavior doesn't stop at the schoolyard. It goes into our workplaces. It goes into our offices, our factories. Another piece that I think is useful for us to understand is that a lot of workplace bullying situations, especially the one-to-one type of situations where somebody really has it over another person, you know, there are various combinations like mobbing situations where people gang up on each other. But the one-to-one type of bullying oftentimes resembles some of the domestic abuse situations that we've seen and become more aware of over the last few decades, right? Where there's a power relationship that is crossed, and it starts becoming very abusive, and it doesn't have to be physically abusive in order to
Absolutely.
Be very hurtful. And some people stay in those relationships, right, that are totally unhealthy for them, and that happens to workers too. They keep thinking, oh, this will change, or I'm exaggerating what's happening, and they don't realize that they're just being set up for a huge fall.
He apologized to me the next day.
Yep.
Learned helplessness, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of psychology in this.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's so painful to see somebody going through this, only to realize what's happened to them maybe a little too late. You know, the wheels have been you know, sort of turning to try and really drive them out of the workplace and to do a number on their confidence and their psyche as well.
But you also indicated it involves an impairment, no?
You know, workplace bullying, it affects people's mental and physical health. You know, and typically somebody will start to show some evidence of anxiety, depression, elevated blood pressure, all the sources of all the indications of some type of a stress effect. And that's an unfortunate reality of what this does. It is a form of interpersonal abuse.
But in terms of, I understand that that's what happens, but then in terms of both alleging, let's assume now, and as it's, and I'm sure you're correct, that it's going to, you know, in our lifetime, these will become laws as they should be. And then the question becomes, in practice, if someone, you know, says, I'm being driven mad, to distraction by this bullying, and I am beside myself, and I'm showing I have high blood pressure, I have sleeplessness, my hair's falling out, I have alopecia areata from the stress. It will require, presumably, then some kind of corroboration. I mean, I'm assuming it won't be like the ADA, or have be perhaps more like sort of the New York City, you know, the definitions in more progressive statutes like the New York Human Rights Law, where the disability is the merest impairment. Really, anything?
Yeah,
condition?
This would have to be some type of impairment, not a disability.
Okay.
But again, I have to say that I've drafted this with an eye towards some caution about opening that door. We know what bullying has done to people, and the typical severe bullying situation almost inevitably involves some type of health impairment.
Right, right. But this is not, I just want to get back to, I think, what you have in mind with this. It's not for the trial lawyers, this statute, right? The idea is not necessarily to have people come and say, with a complaint to their boss, that complaint to human resources, my boss is a bully and I'm sick by it. And then they call a plaintiff's employment lawyer and it becomes, what will it take either, to a settlement agreement so I leave the workplace or we're going to sue you. Isn't the notion ultimately is that the employers start recalibrating, right? They're more sensitive to this, so the person doesn't have to leave and hire a lawyer. And
it's a sad reality that in today's workplace, unless we put a dollar sign on that harm, too many employers ignore it, right? And so, yes, it does create that cause of action so that if somebody who's just being, trampled over goes to you or Deborah, they might well have a claim, but it's also that liability possibility that turns it back on the employer to say, look, why don't you guys start taking this seriously? It's sort of hard to social engineer employers to take mistreatment seriously, so I don't have unrealistic expectations that it's going to all of a sudden turn the workplace into a big, happy, smiley type of place to show up every morning or evening.
Right.
But it will have some salutary effect that sends the message out that, boy, you could face some pretty big damages if somebody is truly being destroyed in the way that we've seen.
And we have seen a difference since 1991, let's say, if we want to take from when the Title VII was amended and from, let's say, the Clarence Thomas hearings to pick that as a pivot point when awareness rose. We still have sexual harassment cases, but there has been somewhat of a sea change in terms of how companies, right? Management no longer condones it. They don't make noises in that, it's okay. It was nothing. He just asked her out three times or touched her buttocks once. It's not madmen scenarios are no longer acceptable because
of
this change, right? So one day it may be the same that if someone calls us and says, my boss is screaming at me every day, I'm going crazy, and we can't find a hook, it's just like, hey, you know what? You're all young Italian people. They're not picking on you for any reason other than he's a miserable guy who's like kicking the dog syndrome, right? And that's what a bully is. It's a bit of a sadist, I guess.
Right? This gives you guys the hook to say
exactly.
To try and negotiate something,
right?
To send the message out, and you're right. I remember back in 1998 when the Supreme Court held that employers could be held strictly liable for a supervisor committed sexual harassment. The phones were ringing off the hooks of defense lawyers the next day with employers going, uh-oh, what does this mean? Because we got this problem going on. We know the law is not a panacea.
Right.
It's just part of what we hope will create some basis for lawyers and individual workers to be able to stand up and say, this behavior just has to stop. Mm.
Right.
So until there is a law, what might be helpful is what can someone do right now, or what are your, I think you have like the four R's of what someone should do being bullied.
Right.
Well, there's an individual process, right, of recognizing what's happening to you. And for a lot of people, even hearing that term workplace bullying is very validating because they didn't know what they were experiencing. And once they find out that, there is a term for this, it makes them actually feel better. It makes them realize they're not going crazy by imagining this.
Right.
So the recognition part, the response part of those four R's is difficult because of the lack of a legal incentive. But it could include, taking the panoply of whatever workplace benefits might be available, workers' comp, filing some type of a disability claim, doing something to remove themselves from the immediate threat. Because it's really hard for somebody to recover from this when the threat is ongoing.
Right.
And then at a higher level, I guess you could say there's, recovery and renewal. And if somebody is, you know, I know that sounds kind of more new age-ish in the way I'm referring to it, but, you know, ultimately my hope is that some of these folks can get out of these situations or fight back in some way that allows them to get to a better place, and that they're not carrying around this fear all the time, which is really what happens. You know, that anxiety and stress are just horrible things to have to live with.
Right.
And you know, it would be nice for us to be able to at least imagine healthier workplaces. That might sound a little pie in the sky right now, but I think we have to hold out that hope that we can, you know, use various devices to try and get to that point. But, you know, to get back to more concrete ground here, the options are limited, right? You folks, if somebody comes to you with a bullying type situation, you know, you're going to check off the different issues that might arise, where you might be able to, you know, use, you know, discrimination law or some type of a whistleblower statute or something like that. You might be able to get them to use family and medical leave just to get out of there for a little while and try and regroup. It's an imperfect set of legal and benefit options, but I think right now the loose parts approach to counseling people, legally speaking, in those situations is probably the best we can do right now.
But there may also be a sex hook or a gender hook for somebody who sort of sees sexism everywhere.
Absolutely.
And so tell us, what percentage of I mean, so who are the prototypical, you know, the bullies and the victims? Are the so-called victims, I don't know if that's the proper term to use here, but are the bullied more often than not women?
Yeah, we've been using the word target or the term target as a little bit more of a sort of a neutral term.
Exactly.
But The reality of most of the survey data in the United States is that women are targeted more often than men for bullying. Now, when men bully, they tend to slightly favor, if that's the right word, women as their targets.
Mm-hmm.
When women bully, it's overwhelmingly they seek out other women.
Right.
And there's the female-to-female workplace relations stuff is so complicated these days,
right.
And bullying is part of that complicated picture. So when you add it up, yes, this is a problem that disproportionately affects women in the workplace.
So let me ask you if this is a potential and way to go, and also whether you'd recommend people complain to HR, even if it's just about bullying, without a hook. But here's what I used to say, and I once gave a CLE years ago and talked about a woman who worked in the garment district here in New York for a crazy, you know, one single owner who owned this 150 employee company, and he was an equal opportunity jerk. He was a total asshole, but he would get on his loudspeaker every day and scream and yell and be profane. But he would say things when it came to her, and she closed with him at night. He would say, like, send that deaf fucking idiot into my office, you know, Sue's girl, that short piece of shit. And on until her hair was falling out. And he would say to her at the end of the day, you know, get out of here. I'm most likely going to fire you tomorrow. Get here early. I don't want to look at you all day. If I had 100 employees like you, I'd kill myself. You're so fucking stupid. Now, this woman who was already this was like the perfect learned helplessness case. She lived with a disabled parent, and she came, you know, 35 years old, and she just came every day, and her hair was falling out, and she just kept coming back for more. He never fired her. He was too busy enjoying himself, torturing her. He probably forgot every morning what he was saying to her. Now, what it turned out after she came to us is examining it, he never said, with all his cursing and screaming and yelling, he called her short or a piece of shit or whatever, it never implicated gender. And his own lawyer said, everybody hates him. He calls everybody names. Now, my take on this was that someone like him, and perhaps this is somewhat standard, it's sort of back to just general bullies, and you mentioned women perhaps being more targeted, whether by men or women, the notion that if that jerk did that to a man, and there was some argument that he does, but the way he was so virulently, you know, aggressive with her till she would cry and leave, you might not do that with a bigger guy who might just snap and rip your arm off and beat you with it or go postal on you. And it just is that maybe that notion of whether you're just a general misogynist or it is a woman who's not a threat to you. She's going to cry. She's going to leave. You won't have any problem with a mano-a-mano kind of thing.
Yep.
So we sort of turn that into, it doesn't matter. It's sexism. We might lose on summary judgment, but we're going to take it forward. And ultimately, you have a situation where they still might dance with you and negotiate, right? And so she was able to get out of there in one piece and start the healing. He paid her some money, and maybe she taught him a lesson.
Yeah, exactly. You try to use the tools you have. And in cases like that, well, maybe there's a pattern. Maybe the content of that abusive speech doesn't have sexual remarks. But as you were suggesting, maybe there's a pattern that he only delivers that kind of invective towards women in the workplace. So if you can, especially if you can make that hook to show that the generic harassment nevertheless reveals an antipathy towards women generally, then maybe you're closer to actually not only being able to negotiate something, but if you had to go to trial on it, possibly succeeding on it.
Right.
And so, yes, you know, it's hard to say why some of these folks sort of pick out someone. Anecdotally, at least, we see that targets of bullying can be high performers, mid-level performers, and weak performers. And all different kinds of personality types as well. You know, it's sad to see somebody who was once a very self-confident, you know, appropriately assertive performer in the workplace who then is targeted by one of these psychopathic type individuals and eventually, you know, at least at that point in time becomes sort of a shell of what they were in terms of their personality. So, we've seen certainly a lot of people who would not fit what we would stereotypically think of as kind of a vulnerable type of individual.
Like a milquetoasty type person.
Right, right. It's not necessarily that playground seek out, you know, the weakest quote-unquote kid on the playground, you know, to push him or her around. You know, sometimes it's people who are jealous of a high performer and they go after them because they're very insecure and want to get that person out of their way.
But is it always a subordinate?
It's not always a subordinate. By about a 2-to-1 margin, maybe a little larger than that, it is supervisor to subordinate. The second most common category is peer-to-peer, and within that, I often see peers-to-peer. That's where you see a lot of these kind of mobbing situations where, you know, maybe there's somebody who's unpopular and a group of people at the same level or rank or whatever go after them. And that is a common scenario as well. The least common scenario is the ingenious individual who somehow manages to bully up the chain. And while that certainly can be an unpleasant experience for a boss who's being bullied, it's actually quite unusual to be able to do it in the kinds of workplaces we have in the United States.
I would think, right? But apparently it occurs for other psychological reasons.
Yeah, you know, if somebody just has that ability to get that edge on someone and make that person's life a living hell, sometimes it transcends the org chart, right?
Right, right. But there is, most of the time, and this is, again, supported by, I guess, our hierarchical kind of paramilitary sort of structure, that it's still, I'm saying to you, I say jump, you say how high. There's a non-consensual sort of power issue here, right, that goes on.
Absolutely. You know, I don't mean to get too law professorish on us, but, you know, if we trace back the roots of American employment law, they go back to master and servant relationships, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, the only big exception we've been able to make in that, and it's not the exception it once was labor unions, where people could at least band together and negotiate as a group. But, you know, the rule of at-will employment is still very much the law of the day, the rule that says you can be fired or hired for any reason or no reason at all. And that absolute power, certainly we've seen it exercised in droves during the recessionary years.
And, of course, in right to work for less states, so-called. And you mentioned 1980. So since the sort of Reagan, you know, corporate counter-revolution we've been in for this last 30-some-odd years, you've gotten, I suppose, further away from what the ideal may have been before that. I mean, we've been going in the wrong direction, no, Professor?
The balance has gone completely out of whack. This is a very, very tough time to be a rank-and-file worker, whether it's, you know, in an office or on the factory floor somewhere. or working, you know, behind a fast food counter at a Walmart, right? The retail sector. You know, really, at almost every level of employment right now, we are seeing that effort to just exercise power over others in that hierarchical way, and it is very much a story of our times right now. It's pretty treacherous.
Of our times, and this is probably the only country in the civilized world that is quite this sort of reactionary in terms of whether it's just the only country that doesn't think that, you know, health insurance should be a right, or, you know, the only country that still doesn't have doesn't have maternity leave that's required, right, for women who have, let alone paid.
Yeah, all these dots connect, right?
Yeah, they all connect.
I've taught a course in comparative employment law, which basically allows us to look at employment law in other nations and compare it to the U.S., and the students are shocked to see the level of dignity and protections afforded to, you know, the average worker in places like Canada, nations in the European continent, in the UK and so forth. Now, you know, it's not to say that work life is a picnic in any of those countries, but, you know, at least the scales of power are a little bit more even, and there are some baseline protections that we, you know, aren't even close to having on a universal level here.
Right. So what can, as more and more people listen to this, our archived show today makes its rounds, Professor Yamada, what can people call their legislator? I mean, here it's pending in all these legislatures around the country. I mean, can we do something about this in terms of awareness? Can people post something to their Facebook? What can we do?
Absolutely. Well, they can certainly contact their legislators and say, we need workplace bullying legislation. They can also go to a website, healthyworkplacebill.org, and they can find out what the status of what's the status of this legislation in their state of residence. As I said, the bill has been introduced in a couple dozen states over the last 10 years. It's currently active in about a dozen right now. And so,
which states can you say?
Off the top of my head, I know the states that I mentioned, right?
Okay.
We got most of the states in New England and sort of the Atlantic side, we've also got a few dotted around the rest of the country. You know, even in places like Tennessee, right? So in states you wouldn't quite expect it to be active in some form or another.
Yeah. And not New York City yet.
Not a New York City bill, but certainly New York State. There is a very active group, and I think you've got something like 5 or 6 dozen legislators who have signed on as co-sponsors.
Excellent.
So this is a reality in the making here, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
And so people can get active. There are grassroots groups in several dozen states, and there are people now who are just saying, you know what? Now I know what it's called. Now I know what it feels like.
Exactly.
Legislator, you got to stop this. You know, at least give us something to fight this with, right? And and that's why I think we're on the precipice here.
Yeah. And I get it.
Well, and I really want to recommend your blog. I read it, you know, faithfully. Minding the Workplace.
Mindingtheworkplace.org?
It's easier just to Google Minding the Workplace. It's a little bit longer of a web address.
All right, it's a WordPress .com. Okay,
yeah.
So Minding the Workplace. You just put that into Google, you'll find Professor Yamada.
Yeah,
that's
terrific. Highly recommend.
Can they sign up? And anyone could sign up for your for the blog.
Yeah, you
for
can
updates.
Get a free subscription to it, and I talk about that and some other workplace issues, and you know, just try to bring in some of the research that you know, scholarly types have been doing on workplace dignity and employee relations, and just, you know, try and contribute to some of the discussion so that people can have yet another source of information, like your guys' radio show here, on understanding what's going on in the workplace these days.
Well, what you've done, which I think is really it's really a brilliant legacy already. You were saying when you were mentioning that before you could sort of name it, you know, if you have something going on with your mind or body and you don't know what it is and you're worried and you're worried and you're worried, and then you go to the physician and the physician says, well, you have you know, psoriasis. That's what it is. It won't kill you, but here's what it's called. We don't have a cure for it, but that's what you have. It can take, it can really ease your mind. You're not dying. You're not going crazy. Knowing that you're being bullied, even if right now there may be limited redress, right now there may be, it still is, it might be really comforting to just understand that, that we're on it and people understand what it is and it's not your fault.
Right.
Right?
And that the more people become aware of it, the more people will become aware of it, a critical mass, and we push them over the edge.
When people understand what's happening to them after struggling with that understanding, that can be a sigh of relief in and of itself. And it's obviously not the ideal to know that, yes, there is a label for how you're being mistreated, but at least it takes some of the confusion and mystery and anguish out of it to know that, frankly, you're not alone. That this, you know, you look at that list of common bullying behaviors and you start checking them off and you go, wow, so my mind wasn't playing games on me. This was really happening, and I wasn't going mad when I was trying to explain it to my friends or family.
Right. That's no small thing.
And you also run or are part of workshops to help people in that repair and recovery and renewal process?
Well, I do a lot of public speaking, and actually I'm getting professional training to become a personal and organizational coach to try and work with people more directly. That isn't going to come till probably sometime next year, but you know what? I think we have to show people how we can connect all the different dots of assisting folks, right? The legal part, the counseling and coaching pieces. There's no one way in which to address this, and what I'm trying to do is get a better big picture understanding of how we can help people and organizations who want to address this behavior. So, and the blog, as you folks mentioned, is the way I try to share a lot of this stuff with the general
that's
public.
Extremely exciting. You know what? Professor Yamada, our indefatigable engineer, Martin, tells me we have 10 seconds left. So with this note, I will just thank you from the bottom of our hearts for being with us today
thank
and
you,
our listeners.
Thank you, thank you.
We really appreciate it. The work you're doing is so important. And we're going to join in and help you, and you let us know if there's anything that we can do in addition to calling our own legislators. But we'll keep sort of marching together, and perhaps one day, you know, we'll meet when the first law is signed, when the first bill is signed
Wonderful.
Into law. You'll be there. Thank you very much, Professor
Jack
Yamada.
And Deborah, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Thank you very much, Professor. We'll see you next time. Okay, bye-bye now. And so that was...
Brilliant.
That was brilliant. And
really. I feel completely inspired and energized.
And that was a wonderful, wonderful show. We'll have to figure out a way to make this happen in New York City, and we'll speak to our friends at A Better Balance and see if we can get that going. Until next week, Monday, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, this is Jack Tuckner and Deborah O'Rell, the Women's Rights in the Workplace Advocates, with you, signing off, telling you have a strong and powerful week. And remember, if no matter what's going on at work, from bullying to harassment, don't quit.